You're listening to KTSW San Marcos.
Coming at you live from the KTSW studios in San Marcos, Texas, this is Bobcat Radio.
Well, this is it, guys.
I was air guitaring a minute ago. I'm ready.
Yep. This is it. This is the last summer Bobcat Radio show. And we got our usual suspects. It's me, Riley Chestnut, with Reed, Graff, and Parker Ray. So every single name has an R in there somewhere. As in, are you ready to have some fun, fellas?
Heck yeah, let's do
it. Are you ready?
I told you.
Are you ready, kids?
Nope, get out.
I'm a WWE fan, so.
No, I was thinking SpongeBob. Nope. I don't know why. But anyways.
SpongeBob's the goat.
No, yeah, SpongeBob is.
I was waiting for that one.
SpongeBob is the sponge. Huh, and Patrick is really the star. But anyway.
Has it always bothered you that he's not a sea sponge? He's just a regular bath sponge?
Yeah, well, maybe his parents didn't love him
enough. With a pet snail.
They just dropped him, and then they found him, and they're like, okay, we'll just live down there with
you. That meows like a cat.
Oh, this took a dark turn.
Yeah, you know what? Let's get off the...
Sorry.
Let's get off the kids show.
So many things.
Anyway, we got a good show for y'all today. Again, I say it. This is the last show with us three. There is going to be one more show this Saturday, but it'll be more of an introspective piece. You can tune into that one, though, from 11 to noon right here on KTSW. It'll be just me and Parker Ray, because unfortunately Reed Graff cannot get his job to let him go to join us.
I will be at Center Point Station delivering burgers. So
why do
like
you have to be a responsible adult?
I got to pay the bills, Parker.
Okay, what? Yeah, he just finally got back into his apartment, people.
I'm not homeless anymore.
No, he's not, even though you had a nice home to call for your own
really
for a while.
Did. Thank you, Heidi and Chris, by the way.
Yeah, of which... But hey, school went out a week ago, but we're still here. So, that's awesome. Anyways, you know what? I can think of worse things to do, and I can't think of really anything better to do when I'm not in school than to come here and work. And with that, the show today is going to take a dive once again into the usual fare of Texas State football after the scrimmage that was held just this last weekend. We can get into a little bit of a deeper dive on what makes this team and just what in general can make a team cohesive. Because, luckily, we do have two people here with experience. Reed Graff, Parker Ray, they haven't played in college, but they did play high school ball at their respective high schools in Hondo and Tivy. So, we're going to dive into a little bit of that discussion today, because we're just here to have fun. And, of course, Texas State Soccer also had a bit of a scrimmage. Not so much, but an exhibition game. Only exhibition game.
I-35 Rivals,
and they beat UTSA 2-0.
Hey, I don't care what you call it. You beat UTSA. It's a good day.
It is a good day. And we're going to get some ideas on how this team looks after we finally got to see them play an actual competition for the first time and what we can expect from tomorrow's game with head coach Kat Connor, Texas State soccer head coach, calling in at the 3:30 break. We'll get more of what she has to say. And, of course... Like I said, three times now, it's the last show with us three, so I want to go back with these guys and take a look back on some of their best moments from this summer cycle, especially for Reed, since it was his first time.
Heck yeah, it's been a blast, it really has.
It has, and after that, of course, we'll have our usual pro talk on whatever we want to bring in. We'll get to
Tyler
that.
Tyler Clifford.
We'll get to that eventually, yes, the Houston guy covering it here, and now, let's get started. This past Sunday morning, Texas State football had a scrimmage that helped to show where this team was and how they were getting acclimated more so to intense competition, which is the closest we've seen them to actually in physical play these last couple weeks. Again, we won't get to see them play actually until they have their first game on September 2nd against Houston Baptist. But there were a couple of glowing reviews from the scrimmage from head coach Everett Withers, like, say, Willie Jones III, the guy who got most of the snaps at quarterback for that scrimmage. He made a couple good plays, set up a few touchdowns for like Mason Hayes, Robert Brown Jr. So based on what you heard, guys, what do you say has been going around for this team?
The biggest highlight's the quarterback battle and the fact that Willie Jones III got most of the snaps over Jalen Gibson and Jalen Nelson. That speaks volumes. I still think the coaches are very high on both those gentlemen, but as of right now, it looks like Willie Jones III is going to be starting quarterback come September 1st. And also, another side note, we talked wide receivers earlier in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
guy we forgot to mention that I keep hearing about is Mason Hayes.
Mason Hayes.
Oh, yeah. Could have a good year.
Junior.
He's going to be one of the veteran leadership guys.
I will tack on this. Mason Hayes looked really good, of course, back in the spring game, so it seems like light years ago. But he definitely led the way during the spring game, and I think he's going to be targeted a lot. I mean, he's a veteran that knows this offense, and you're asking about positions that are hard to learn. I know O-line's hard to learn. Running back, there's a bit of a curve from high school to college, but not as big as I would say maybe like a receiver or a quarterback. You got to learn all the routes. You got to learn all the blocking schemes. You got to learn just how this offense runs. And I think Mason Hayes, being the veteran that he is, along with Tyler Watts and other players like that, I think is going to be a huge target for whoever the young guy we throw out there, whether it be Jones or Gibson. I'm thinking Jones. I'm leaning towards Jones, but there's a lot of interesting things going out of this camp right now.
Yeah, and specifically, we've been talking a lot about offense, but we love to get into the defense because, obviously, from what has been said from Coach Everett Withers on most of these interviews, that the defense, obviously, having been together longer, is coming along a little bit better, mm-hmm. but it's still finding ways to get the most out of, say, their new guys, especially the D-line.
Oh, yeah.
With the new D-line coach, Isaac Mooring,
yeah.
a great name that was picked up over the course of the year to add to the staff. He was talking about it just in a practice 2 days ago before an interview with a guy you've mentioned before, Jordan Mitty, one of the new D linemen for Texas State after spending last year as labeled as a linebacker. Isaac Mooring, and stressing the importance of what it means to have guys like Samuel Wadd adding size to that nose tackle position. Here we go with it.
Well, the role is generally in all defenses, you want to be strong up the gut, you know, up the gut. But the closer you get to the ball, the stronger you got to be. It starts right there over the ball. And I tell them that every single day within the meet. So we're going to find that guy over the ball that can set the tone for the entire defense. You know, you got to be able to hold up on blocks. You got to be able to get off of blocks. I mean, in our scheme, it's not just about eating up blocks for the defensive lineman. In our scheme, it's about making plays within the rules of the defense. First rule of the defense is make the play. Second rule of the defense is to drastically make the ball change direction if you don't make the play.
So a lot of good information being said there. Again, Samuel Wadd, a transfer in that position, three registered nose tackles on this roster with him, Jamar Daniels, John Lilly. Personally, I like Samuel Wadd because of what he's able to bring from his experience, because out of those guys, the other two are freshmen, and of course Jamar Daniels is a massive, massive individual at 315, the largest of any of them. But Sammy Wadd has that height ability at 6'1", while also having played already at Trinity Valley Community College. He's going to be trying to bring it in. Of course, when camp started, he got here a little bit later. Coach Withers said he still had some conditioning to do to help get in better shape. But the defense is really stepping up, and I'm happy to hear from such glowing reviews from Coach Isaac Mooring.
Yeah, I like the fact that Coach Mooring basically said that, you know, this is not a defensive line that's just going to take up blocks, take up space. They're going to actually penetrate the gap, make plays within the rules of the defense, and they're going to be monsters up front, which is what we need them to be up there to set the tone for the great linebackers, set those guys free. If those guys can be monsters up front and take up blocks and just make plays, imagine what Gabe Lloyd and Brian Lundy can do back behind those guys. I mean, it's just going to make it easier for the secondary as well. So it starts up front with the line. It's good to hear from Coach Mooring and the fact that he's getting those guys ready. I'm really excited about it.
Reed, you got anything to say with it?
I mean, you mentioned Mitty. I'm still very high on Mitty. I love his versatility because they can play him if they needed him. He's played linebacker. He was a former linebacker, so they can play him at linebacker. They can play him at inside line. They can play him defensive end. I think they have a lot of versatility on the D-line.
Sounds like a dang J.J. Watt doing everything.
Little bit. They have Easy Onyema, who's got a lot of experience. He can play the – he's be a great pass rusher type. He could also probably move inside if he needed him. John Lilly's a former two-star recruit. So they've got a lot of – different talents that they're going to be able to plug into different roles when they need them. So I think that we're going to have a lot to work with in the D-line. It's going to be a project, but if they can get the right guys out there at the right times, they can make a big impact.
And fellas, before we go into the 10-minute break and maybe a little bit after, the team released some new alternate uniforms.
Woo!
The golden standard, where it's all gold and even the number marks have Bobcat claw marks through it. So quick little suggestion on what y'all think of that.
Well, some people bleed red. I bleed maroon and gold, and I'm loving those gold unis.
Oh, I love it. I love being able to throw something unique at people. Plus, If we play it at some stadium, might have some wacky colors. Just wear those gold jerseys. Can't even see them. Just like Boise State, and they wear that blue. Can't even see them on the field.
Hopefully so.
That's the plan.
Exactly
it's
right.
It's all strategic.
Yeah, it's all strategic. It's supposed to help blind the players if it's a good
especially
sunny
if it's real
day.
Sunny, it'll bounce right off. There you go.
Yeah, you can't complete any passes if you can't see.
Look good, play good.
Exactly. And with that, that's going to carry us into our 10-minute break, and we will be right back after this short one-minute time. You're listening to Bobcat Radio on KTSW, San Marcos.
Hey, do you understand what's going on in this movie?
Don't you? You did see the first movie, right?
This is a sequel?
They showed it at the San Marcos Cinema Club last week.
How was I supposed to know that?
Shh. Check out their Facebook page, S-N Cinema Club. They're always showing short films, local movies, and classics for the San Marcos cinephile.
Would you please be quiet? You do know this is a movie theater.
Well, excuse me for appreciating art.
A message from KTSW, the other side of radio.
Right now, 1 in 7 Hays County residents are food insecure, and less than 3/4 of those people qualify for government help. The Hays County Food Bank is working to fight hunger in our community. They provide food distribution and nutrition education, but they can't do it alone. They need you. Their summer fundraising campaign is running now through July 31st. You can make a difference by donating to the Hays County Food Bank online or in person. Visit haysfoodbank.org for more details. A message from KTSW, the other side of radio.
Texas State Volleyball has been on top of the Sun Belt for a long time. Assistant coach Sean Hewitt has a special message for all you new Bobcats.
And with that, we are back. Sorry about that confusion there, folks. But welcome back, everybody. Parker Ray, Reed Graff, Riley Chesson's here. And before we went into the 10-minute break, we were just discussing a little bit of Bobcat football, what's been progressing well, especially on the defensive line with D-line coach Isaac Mooring, and some of the glowing reviews that even Willie Jones was getting from that scrimmage game. And, guys, the beauty of it is for that kid right there, WJ3, you can call him whatever you want.
I like that, WJ3.
WJ3.
I mean, I like it.
Yeah, it's simple. I'm sure they'll come up with better ones. I mean, Bill and Brant, they can come up with nicknames better than I can, but
they're professionals.
Yeah, the shocking part is, you know how old Willie Jones III was when he had that scrimmage getting most of the snaps?
How old?
17.
17.
And you know what happened a day later? He turned 18. Wow. So to get
happy birthday, Willie.
Yeah, happy late birthday, Willie. Congrats on finally being able to buy lottery tickets. But that's the good news. He's still so young.
Wow.
He is the youngest out of any of the freshman quarterback that we have, and he's the tallest. He's the most physically, from what I've seen, gifted in terms of that ability to use what's being put in front of him. But what kind of factors does it mean from Coach Ever Withers' standpoint for you guys in the best interpretation that you can, that he's giving this guy who was only 17 years old when he was doing it this much opportunity to grow?
I think it speaks volumes that Everett Withers, because he's a pretty careful, cautious guy for the most part. He's not going to put his players in position to be in trouble if he knows they can't handle it. Obviously, he has thrown Willie Jones III into the fire. He believes in this kid. And I think even though the offensive line has gotten a lot better, it's gonna pay dividends to see a guy who can go outside the pocket when the pocket breaks down, because you know you're going to play schools like Appalachian State, schools with great D-lines. It's going to be great to see him extend plays like that when the pocket's not exactly going right. I know they talked about Gibson being more of like the pocket passer guy, and I think if everything's going right and the O-line's holding up, Gibson would probably be the starter. But as far as things with Jones, I think he can extend plays that he's going to have to do. Until we see how good this O-line really is, it helps that he can extend plays and do stuff like that. So I'm really high on Willie Jones. I always have been. But I think it speaks volumes that Everett Withers put him into the fire right off the bat. And he's pretty confident. He says, you know, if he's ready to play, I'm going to play him. I don't care, 17, 18, whatever. So it does. It's really great. And his size is there alone. So he's only going to get bigger and stronger. And I'm really excited about him. It's really, really ready for football season to start, man. I can't wait.
Well, that speaks volumes to how mature he is, because at that young of an age, like, quarterback is the most important spot. Can anybody debate that? It's the most important spot on a football
and
almost, team.
It's probably the most important spot in any position in any sport.
Yeah, like, because not only do you have to know your stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You have to know what your linemen are doing. You got to know what your running back's supposed to be doing. You got to know what your wide receiver is going to be
doing. Know what your wide receiver's doing.
And you got to know what they're doing when things are going wrong.
You have to know how to respond to different situations. You have to be able to assess your team, say everybody's set, we know what we're doing. Then you got to look at the other team, make your adjustments, And then when you snap the ball, you still have to be able to make adjustments within the play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes the plays go, you know,
exactly
to crap, and then you have to make something up. And it's good to know where your receivers are going on the field and have that chemistry there.
Yeah, and if, so like it's for a young quarterback. I've heard a lot when my dad talks about quarterbacks. My dad was very high on guys that were able to look at their first option, see he was covered, and look for their 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
And that's very hard for young, immature quarterbacks to do. They get their guy who's running the fly route, and they want to throw to the guy running the fly route. Mm-hmm. But if the guy's getting double covered, you can't force that. And so you have to be able to look to your 2, 3, and 4, or even your drop-off with your running back. And so that it goes to just mature. The Coach Everett Withers must have a lot of trust in him to be able to make those reads, make sure his guys are in place. But I will say this, though. I don't think it's set in stone because we have some very talented quarterbacks. Jalen Gibson
right
has gotten some high.
We know
Keyshawn Kelly's a great athlete, great recruit. We haven't talked about him a lot.
Yeah, he's been dealing with a shoulder injury, so he hasn't gotten
when he gets healthy, he's a great athlete.
And don't forget Nelson. Slide him in.
Jalen Nelson's a great. You can see Nelson running some wildcats. So.
Yeah, who is the quarterback and listed also as a running back possibility because, of course, undersized compared to Keyshawn Kelly, Willie Jones III, and Jalen Gibson. He's
only
5'8".
6'1", 6'2".
Yeah, whereas he's only 5'8".
Yeah.
So he's got a little bit to determine there. But
the thing for Nelson is, you've talked about this, Riley, how the team's going to be willing to do some more interesting stuff as far as wildcat and little trick plays. Nelson's perfect for that because he can throw. He's a great runner.
He can sneak under.
Exactly. You can put him at running back and then do a little running back pass. So Nelson's going to be a big part of the team this year.
And so I've heard a little bit of what's been going around here. Of course, Damian Williams still out, and even if he comes back at this point, I still don't feel comfortable. Yeah, I don't feel comfortable.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, I don't feel comfortable, even if he would have come back by now, giving him the starting job.
He's probably light years behind Jones and Gibson right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just from doing scrimmages and practicing.
Yeah. Well, here, I'll say this. How old is Damian Williams? 21, 22 years old.
He is 20. He'll be 23 this year.
The 17, just turned 18-year-old kid has been more mature than you because he's been at practice every day. He didn't get himself suspended from a team.
Hey, that
so
speaks volumes right there.
Maybe the 18-year-old Willie Jones III is more capable of handling a college quarterback starting quarterback job than the Damian Williams. Maybe that's why Damian Williams isn't the starting quarterback from Mississippi State, and that's what we're finding out.
I guess we'll find out if Damian Williams comes after you.
I heard one.
Maybe
coach.
He can prove me wrong. And Damian, if you prove me wrong, I will be very proud of you. But that seems to be the case right now.
Yeah, I heard
it's time
one,
to man up.
I heard one ex-NFL coach, I think, say if the young guy is close to the veteran, you give it to the young guy every time. Even if he's a few ticks
just
behind
the
Williams.
Future.
The fact that he's that close to Williams means Williams isn't doing his job.
Mm-hmm.
Which means Jones and Gibson are if they're that close, you have to give the young guys the nod.
Yeah, Williams isn't even there to do his job, and that's his own fault. So, and we don't know the details.
It's
just academic. That's all that's been said.
Academic?
Yeah.
Got to take care of your business.
Still the same thing.
Yeah, you still got to handle your business in the classroom. And obviously, coming to this school, everyone's done such a great job who's been here handling their business in the classroom. GPA-wise, it reflects.
Yeah.
So you got to bring that kind of intensity there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very well said.
Very well said. And so, now that scrimmage has happened, and we keep, honestly, every time I watch one of these interviews on YouTube, like, say, with a couple of the under coaches, like the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator, Randall McCray, you know what you hear as background noise most of the time? The team getting loud, getting proud, having a fun time. And compared to what we heard from what was going on last year, where it seemed like it was high school cliques, compared to this year, this team is really growing together. So I just wanted to get your opinion based off what y'all remember from your time in high school at Hondo and Tivy. What makes a good team cohesive and close?
Well, I think for, you know, the locker room, especially in a sport like football where you're just daily grind every day, you're working out all day, you're going to class, then you're going back to work out some more, and then you have practice until like 7 or 8 in the afternoon. I mean, it's a long grind of a season in football, and you're working every day, and you're practicing every day, and you have classes, and it's the same with college. So I think to have a good locker room, basically what you need is you need to have a guy that's okay with a little bit of laughter, a guy that's able to kind of share joy with other people. I don't necessarily think I was even close to the best player on Tivy, but I think my goal going into the locker room was...
You heard it here first, folks.
My goal, it's not breaking news. My goal going into the locker room was just to make people laugh, make people find joy, encourage other people around me to do better, because if I wasn't playing, I wasn't going to go sit on the bench and cry about it. I was going to, you know, you know, take my licks and say, hey, you know, I'm obviously not the best player here, so I'm just going to encourage these other guys to do better, and I'm going to joke around with them in practice and, you know, help them out when I can, give them good looks in practice and stuff like that. But for the most part, it's just having guys that just genuinely love each other and want to see the other person do better. You can't have that pettiness inside you. You can't hold grudges like that. And I think that's really what makes team chemistry great. At least at Tyvee, the years I was there, it was a great chemistry-filled locker room. And I know Reed's got something to say on that too, but it really is one of those sports where you just have to have the chemistry.
So the way I've always said this is you have to have the same goal. Everybody on the team has to have the same goal. My senior year in 2014, there were 22 seniors on our varsity squad, I believe, something like that. When we weren't super talented, when we weren't great, we had a couple great athletes like William Coleman, who went to play a little bit of football at Mary Harden Baylor, and Jacob Brown, who went to play some football at A&M Commerce. But for the most part, we were just a bunch of scrappy guys who weren't. We probably had the smallest D line in the state, like no doubt. But we played hard.
Yeah.
And we had a chemistry. I wasn't exactly close. I was good friends. I'm still friends with maybe two or three guys from that team now. But when we were on that team, we were brothers. It was a brotherhood. We all had the same goal, you know. If we didn't blame it on somebody, we knew what we wanted to do, and we had a great time. And I mean, we ended up we had a 6-4 record, which wasn't the best, and we did lose in the first round. But we played way over our talent.
But I bet you had fun doing it.
It was a blast, and we had. And I'm not talented at all. Like I'm not, but I somehow managed to win an all district. Honorable mention, because we had such good teamwork. Like me and one of my best friends, Alva Joe Camacho, we rotated in the nose spot.
Yeah.
And I could just say, out of cohesiveness, that D line unit alone was very, we just clicked.
Yeah.
So we were very good at, you know, you're better as a whole than you are one player. So, but that's kind of where we played better than we were because we clicked together.
Let me ask you a question, Reed. Isn't it exciting when the guy you're switching out on positions with, the guy who plays the same position as you, you know he's taking reps away from you? Isn't it awesome when you know you're good friends with that guy? Like, that's when you know chemistry.
Oh, that's how AJ Camacho and myself became close friends. Yeah. I was his best man a year ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, so real good friends.
AJ and I, he was the starter going into the season, and he suffered an injury, and I picked up for him, and then we became kind of a rotating crew.
Yeah.
But it was myself, Zane Grove, Kyle Decker, Wesley Rogge, Colby Adlong, Lawrence Medellin, and AJ was, and I'm probably missing somebody, and I apologize, but that was our D-line group, and we just rotated out very well. We played off each other very well. When AJ was tired or had an injury, I would go in.
Yeah.
If we needed a defensive end, Lawrence could play it. We had such good linebackers that it would play to it. But that goes to the cohesiveness of the team.
Yeah.
If your team isn't all pulling for the same goal and everybody's not on the same click, like, you're going to struggle. There's going to be conflicts within the team. And I don't think we're seeing that with Texas State. It seems like every time you watch, like Riley said, every time you watch an interview, they're in the background having a good time. And,
oh, yeah.
Even these three these young freshman quarterbacks, I'm sure there isn't any angst between them. They're all just pulling for the same goal. And I'm sure when Willie Jones III is getting snaps, Jalen Gibson and Keyshawn Kelly are on the sidelines learning from what he's doing and encouraging him. And then when they go in, it's the same thing. That's what you want, you know. And that's what it seems like we're getting from Texas State.
That's awesome.
And y'all brought it up exactly right. That is the reason why this year's team is so cohesive compared to what last year was. You got guys that know what they're coming to here. They know what they want to do here. And they're ready to embrace whatever Withers is wanting to teach. Whereas last year, there were a couple guys who were a little hesitant or just unappreciative of whatever Withers was trying to change for them because they've been hearing one thing for so long, and that's what it's going to take. Mm-hmm. Whereas this year, everyone is coming for the program for the same experience, the same result, and they feel fairly confident about what they can do. And now, to carry us towards that nice little 3:30 break, is a very, very careful observation. The offense is divided up into many parts, so is the defense, obviously, we know that.
Yeah.
I wanted to get y'all's guesstimation or your analysis on on which area of the offense will be ready to go the quickest and which one will probably take the most time to get something going.
Reed, you want to go first or I can go?
I'll jump on it.
Okay.
As far as the quickest, offensively it's going to be the O-line because they've got a lot of veteran leadership. And they, like, we've got guys, Aaron Brewer's on the Remington watch list. Like, you've got some great and the, one of the captains is.
And he was just named to the Tyler Rose Campbell watch
list.
Yeah,
so like they've got some great athletes there. They've got guys who've got have a lot of college level experience. So I think they're probably the farthest along. I think the wide receiving core isn't far behind because they have some good veteran leadership as well. You know, you're probably not going to see a whole lot of freshmen here. You might see Twyford play a little bit there from the wide receiver spot.
It may be people that already know the offense. Yeah, yeah, like
or
you said.
Yeah, or even go back to the O line. Gabe Schrade is a great tight end, and he'll do a lot of blocking and receiving. The positions that we're gonna see a lot of growth from game 1 to game 12 is gonna be quarterback and running back because we have very young players there. But I guarantee you, you will see them improve week by week if they coach well, if they progress well. And the thing that I'm so excited about throughout the season, we could see 4 different running backs play. We could see 3 different quarterbacks. You could see 4 different quarterbacks. You could see Jalen Nelson, Keyshawn Kelly, Jalen Gibson, and Willie Jones III could all get time. Mm-hmm. So I think as far as how far they need to go, quarterback and running back are the longest, and offensive line is going to be the most ready to go. And defensively, do we even need, like, it's the linebacking core. They're set. Mm-hmm. That is a great linebacking core. And I think the secondary is where we're kind of having some questions as far as
And obviously a lot to learn with so many new guys coming in. And even just this morning, Cordell Rogers, who played cornerback for Texas State, has been shifted to safety.
Yeah.
So we're going to see how that adjustment goes. And so, yeah. Parker.
What Reed said, I agree with a lot of it. I think what he said when he was talking about the running backs or the offensive line being ready to go like week one, I think you're right about that. I think offensive line is just one of those positions. You have to learn new plays. You have to learn blocking schemes and stuff. But you catch on pretty quick. You know who you need to hit. You know who you're playing with. You know the 5 that's set. You become friends with those guys, and you build off of that, and that sets the tone right there. So, really, the offensive line needs to be ready to go week one, or else this team's going to struggle bad.
And the offensive line, you just told me to talk about cohesiveness. Yeah. That's a spot where, like, week one, week two, as far as the technical stuff, with playing football, you should have down.
Yeah.
It's going forward, them gelling as a group. That's what becomes important. But, like I said, we have a lot of returners there. I don't think that's going to be a big issue.
Yeah. And so I think offensive line for sure is going to be ready to go. I think even running back is going to be a little bit trickier to learn, but I think get the ball, hit the hole, and if the offensive line is doing good, I think that kind of goes right behind.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just hit the holes the right way, I think the running backs will be fine. There's a lot of talent there. That's what forced Stedman Mayberry out. I think they're going to be ready to go. I'm a little bit more worried about the receivers and, of course, the quarterbacks. I mean, who isn't worried about the quarterback right now?
Yeah, all true freshmen.
But I think
the 1, 2, 3 are all true freshmen.
The receivers learning, basically, I'm not worried about the receivers individually. I think it's a great group of talent. I think learning who's going to be throwing me the football. Who's going to be? Is it going to be Gibson? Is it going to be Jones? How is the chemistry going to be between the receivers and the quarterback position? Because that is key when a play breaks down and they have their own little body language that kind of say, run this way, run that way. You know how Aaron Rodgers can kind of direct traffic mid-play? Stuff like that. Like, I think it's going to take time to develop and just learning these passing routes out and just how Everett Withers wants to expand this offense. But I think we're going to see a much more run-heavy offense and a much more and a much more just pound it behind that O-line because we have a great O-line led by Coach Mateos, and I'm really excited to see our O-line improve drastically from last year.
Very true, and obviously, from what I'm hearing, we all agree on which area will develop the fastest, the offensive line, because, again, they've got experienced guys like Brewer, Roland, Mizorak, and Gambrell all played last year and will be taking most of the spots, probably. Whereas the other guys that are going to be coming in and learning, Josiah Washington, Caleb Carlisle, Nick Foster, the last two being freshmen, it's going to be a learning experience, but they're going to benefit from having Coach Mateos, who's worked with the offensive line coach from LSU and Arkansas, who last year looked absolutely huge when we played against them. And LSU, last year reputation, one of the best offensive lines in college football. That's only going to serve them better, whereas the area I think is going to have to take the most growing. Not the quarterback, not the running back, wide receivers. Mm. Now, the wide receivers have plenty of experienced guys. They got Elijah King, they got Tyler Watts, they got Thurman Morbley, they got Mason Hayes, Gabe Trade, and Brendan Rushing, both playing tight end.
Yeah, individually it sounds great, but I'm with you, Riley. They're going to need some growth.
Yeah, the starting lineup, that feels set to me for the wide receivers, but they are the deeper part of this offense, and a lot of those other guys have a lot to learn before they can start taking over. And it's only going to be made even more pressing to see who sticks in the program and who truly will be ready to take it on because of who is now taking over as the wide receivers coach. And Ron Antoine, who again has a sterling reputation as a wide receiver coach from what he did back at Fresno State, turning Devontae Adams into the best receiver in college football and now one of the better receivers in the NFL for Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. So it's going to be a true test to see who sticks around, who can make it through this program, whereas who is going to be really broken in and ready to play that big game. And with that, that is going to carry us into our 3:30 break. We will have head coach of Texas State Soccer, Kat Connor, on after this break. We will be right back as you're listening to Bobcat Radio on KTSW San Marcos.
In 2015, nearly 3,500 lives were lost due to distracted driving. Distracted driving is just as dangerous as driving under the influence and can destroy somebody's life at a moment's notice. Distractions include texting, eating, lots of people in the car, and even driving while tired can be a potential problem. For more information on distracted driving and how you can play a part in raising awareness, visit nhtsa.gov/riskydriving. Let's make a deal to stay alert behind the wheel. A message from KTSW, the other side of radio.
Dude, what an awesome party. I'm so drunk right now.
Bro, me too. What do you say we go pass out at my place?
Yeah, definitely. I don't have cash for an Uber, though, so just let me get my keys. Driving drunk not only puts you at risk, but it puts others at risk as well. If you don't have the money for an Uber, you don't have the money for hospital bills, so make a plan. Have a designated driver to keep yourself in the streets safe.
A message from KTSW, the other side of radio.
Welcome back to Bobcat Radio, everybody. Parker Ray, Reed Graff, and Riley Chestnut here with, now calling in, head coach of Texas State Soccer, head coach Kat Connor. And so, head coach, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Oh, we're doing just fine. It's the last show for us three together this summer, and we're happy to have you on as our final guest.
Oh, well, thank you. That's an honor, then.
All righty. And now, time to break it down. Last week, y'all had the opportunity to go play a little bit of exhibition soccer against our rivals right down the road in UTSA, go into their territory, and you come out with a great 2-0 win that saw a first half where you got overall in the entire game, the first half, what was the difference in the second half being that y'all managed to keep a lot of pressure away from your goalie, who Heather Martin doing a fantastic job in that first half with 4 saves listed, and then your bench players, your young players like a Pykoff, sorry about that, I'm still trying to get everything down.
All right.
Coming up with 2 goals for you as the difference. And so my first question is, it was easy to see how much of a difference those young players made. And Jessica Pykoff and Heather Martin for your team out there in San Antonio, what made them so well prepared to contribute in that contest off the bench in Pykoff's case?
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, and I think most of the time it's just how quickly can a newcomer come in and learn the system. And that's the biggest thing. You know, they're all coming in, and they're all little green, but it's like how quickly can they adapt to a different playing style, really. They're all coming in, you know, with their own differences of playing high school or club, and then you've got to come in and train to understand the Bobcat style of play, which we're a little bit more pass-oriented, more possession-oriented, trying to control the midfield a little bit more and find our way how we're going to penetrate in. And actually, the first half goal with Jessica Pykoff, that starts with Sydney Kammer, who's a newcomer, and with Haley Groff. So it was a double assist into Jessica Pykoff. So all three of them were newcomers, and so that's brilliant, like you said, for newcomers to be, you know, kind of understanding the system and playing to the top of their form. So that's exciting that they're already getting it and able to contribute.
Hey, Coach Connor.
The difference kind of from first half to second half was, you know, UTSA started out with a 4-back system and then moved more numbers into the midfield, which really kind of gave our midfield a little bit of a different look, and they had to try to figure out, you know, how to defend it. So it gave us that halftime break, and we were able to kind of settle them down and get them to understand, you know, what the shifts were and then how to defend what they were trying to do to us. And then we were able to understand it and control it.
Hey, Coach, Reed Graff here. Y'all beat UTSA 2-0 in the match, and anytime you shut out a team, the goalies are a big part of that.
Yeah.
And Riley mentioned Heather Martin, who had a great game. Mm-hmm. Both of your goalies this year are sophomores, if I'm correct, right? Heather Martin and Catherine, excuse me if I mispronounce her name, is it Buddy?
Yes, sir.
Buddy, awesome. They're obviously going to be a big part of your team. What can you tell us about those two ladies?
Oh, my gosh. First of all, the only thing that I would say that is a downfall about them is I got two brilliant athletes and two brilliant goalkeepers. And, And they're both, it's like having two great quarterbacks, and you're just trying to figure out who to play the whole time. So Heather's an unbelievable athlete. She's just, I mean, her, we haven't tested her on a vertical, but she's just, she can jump. I mean, the gal's got springs in her legs. And then, of course, she reads the game so well. So that helps her out right now with it. Catherine actually is a little bit more raw in her skill. And so she's picking up more and more the advancements of her angles, and I think that will just improve upon her play. But they're both driven athletes. Heather's looking to go into the medical field, so she just, man, she's always like a sponge. She's just soaking up everything. And, of course, Catherine Buddy is an engineer, and she loves to just break down everything and know everything inside and out. So they're two students of the game, which I guess makes that even fun to coach, too, because they're just – they're driven as athletes, but yet they're going to do everything in their possible realm to keep a shutout, and you feel safe with them back there.
All right, Coach Cat, this is Parker Ray here. I'm just going to dive right into this one. I don't really like to look ahead. I'm not a guy that likes to look ahead. I like to live in the moment, so I understand if you don't want to look ahead this far. But as a coach, you're always kind of looking ahead, so I guess it's a pretty good question. But as Sun Belt Conference play rolls around, is there a certain team out there that you just really want to coach against and really want to beat? Is there a certain team that stands out amongst the rest of the other Sun Belt Conference teams that you're just like, this squad, we need to take it to them. We need to beat this team. We need to show the Sun Belt Conference we're not here to play around?
Sure. I mean, it's University of South Alabama. You know, they've won it, like, for, what, 3 years straight now. And to be honest with you, every chance we've played them, we're in it by one goal difference, and it's frustrating that we haven't been able to capitalize on goal scoring as much as we have against them. We've had some opportunities, and then we just don't put them away. So, I mean, we're not far from them, and I keep trying to tell the players that we just got to finish our chances. It definitely, it's a higher-paced game. It's definitely strategical and more tactical of a game, but we just need to finish our chances. We had opportunities last year, and we actually scouted them really well, and the players did a great job. They just, in front of the net, they didn't finish it in the first half, and I personally think that we could have had them on their heels at least 1-2 to nothing in the first half, but then we slip up in the first half, and after we have had our chances and they get a goal and our kids kind of get, you know, kind of like, oh, no, here it goes again, and you got to pick them back up then. And then I'm proud of them, though, but they always come back and keep fighting, and they get themselves back in the game the second half. So it's USA. There's just no doubt about it. It's South Alabama. I really think if we could beat those guys, I think these ladies would understand just how great they are, because I think they are. I think our players are phenomenal athletes. I just got done with film with our forwards, and I tell you what, if we can get these young ladies turned running at goal, any team better look out. That's all I gotta say. They can finish like nobody's business. So I'm really excited about the firepower. I'm excited about what they can do, and I'm excited about the season.
All right, that was a very good answer, and I'm certainly excited for when that game's going to come up to see what y'all are going to be packing against South Alabama. Now, simply put, y'all had a pretty good showing. Of course, the first half you said in your post-game interview that they came out a little bit slow, which it's the first game they're getting to play together, so maybe a little bit expected. So from that game and then the second half where they just absolutely turned it on and kept going after each and every opportunity, will you expect that next game versus Northern Arizona to start off a little faster, or do you think it's going to be a little bit of a slow start again?
Well, I think we probably will come in a little bit more slow and a little bit more, I don't want to say cautious, because we're going to try to come at them and take the game to them, but, you know, we don't really know much about Northern Arizona. They don't let any film get out on them, and they don't let scouting reports get out on themselves. So we kind of don't really know what to expect with them. So we will play a little bit more defensive-minded at first, just kind of test them out, kind of like almost like football. You kind of have like these scripted plays or these scripted things that you're going to test at them just to see how that other team reacts, and so that we can see, you know, how physical are they, how speedy are they, how technical are they. So there's some scripts in there that we're going to do in the first 15 minutes that we'll be testing the other team and seeing what's going to happen. And I guess that's what I mean by, so I shouldn't say cautious, but more like just kind of a little bit more scripted play from us to see, you know, what's going on with these Northern Arizona gals, and you know, how can we exploit them? And then that's when we will begin to, you know, look at ourselves and say, okay, now let's do this shift, or let's move this player here, or let's like try to get this player into the seam, or something like that. So it'll kind of be a little bit like football in that realm. And like you guys see, is that they do a little bit of scripting to kind of see what's going at them, and then they kind of start to open it up a little bit more.
Okay, Coach. So Riley and I are going to be broadcasting tomorrow's game against Northern Arizona there at the complex we have here. What can you tell us about the complex? Like, do you enjoy it? What's special about it? What can you tell us about it?
To tell you the truth, I love the special of just being on underneath the lights. The lights just, I don't know, something about it in that place. It's up on the hill. Lights come on. It's just, to me, it's magical. I love it. I love when the lights, playing under the lights. I love that atmosphere. And then the other thing I love is, like, it's no doubt, I know most of our fans come in, like, right at the last minute. I look over there as the kickoff goes on, and there's about, you know, 10, 20 people in the stands. And then next thing I know, I look over there at halftime, and it's packed. And that's one thing I love about it is people, I think, know it's free admission. Come on, it's a great thing to come do on a Friday night, and you'll get some fun, fast action. So I love the atmosphere that the fans bring into the game.
I think I was just going to piggyback on that one, too, because I was really interested in when it comes to crowd noise and fans getting into it. I know in football it's pretty big deal. It's pretty much required the fans. You want the fans to get into it. Basketball, baseball, all kind of the same thing. For soccer, I know the fans can get pretty rowdy. But do you guys kind of feed off the crowd energy the same way those other teams do, or is it like the crowd getting rowdy? Is that what y'all kind of seek, or do y'all just kind of go in there and play, and the crowd doesn't really factor into it?
Well, I'm going to tell you from my standpoint, I don't really hear anything because I'm so zoned in.
Yeah.
But I can tell you from our player standpoint, they do. When they hear you guys yelling and screaming for them and even, like, giving the referee a little boo or two because it's not the best call, man, that really gets them jazzed. And I know even when we go into overtime, I don't like overtime, but when they are asked to dig deeper and find something in them and everybody's cheering and on their feet, they do. They find that extra energy. So I have to admit, I think our players do feed off that energy. And when people are rowdy, or when you're giving, another opponent, I love it when they know their names.
Oh, yeah.
They know their names, or they know what grade they are, or where they're from, and go and give them a little chaz. Our players feed off of it. They tell me about it when we go back into the locker room, and they'll say what the fans were saying to those players. So it's kind of fun.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Coach. And I got one last question before we'll let you go and get back to preparing for tomorrow's big game to start off the season. And that question is, what do you want to see in terms of the atmosphere from the fans in tomorrow's game and throughout the whole season?
Well, I tell you what, to me, I love it when people do chant. You always hear, and I mean like chants, like if you hear like English Premier or anything like that, they usually are just, even if it's just the player's name, it's just usually a basic, the clap of, you can find it any basic, baseball or hockey, that you can hear them chant and then chant the player's name. And it just gets our players jazzed, or even just Bobcats, it gets them going. And to me, if you can be a little rowdy and give us some chance, it'll get a great atmosphere going, and I know we'll all have a great time.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Coach Cat, and we hope you have a wonderful day, and we look forward to seeing y'all come out and play tomorrow.
Great. I look forward to seeing you guys. Thank you for covering us.
Thank you. And that was Head Coach Cat Connor giving us the scoop on what we can expect from all of us being involved. Parker, you're going to be producing the game,
so you get to
hear it.
I'm going to get when you guys, you'll find out. I mean, obviously, Riley's broadcast some games, but you'll find out you get so soaked into the game that it's kind of hard to actually take a step back and know what's going on fully. I think it's going to be fun for me to sit here and produce it and kind of hear what actually is going on and what you guys are telling me what's going on, and I'm really excited to be on this side of it for a change. But I'm really excited for the USA game, the South Alabama game. Now that she gave us a team to hate, oh, boy, it's going to be fun.
Target.
There will be blood.
Yeah, my dad just asked me, what time's that game going to be? Well, Riley and I are going to be broadcasting tomorrow's game, Northern Arizona, at 7 o'clock. Make sure you tune in.
Pre-game will be 6:45.
Pre-game will be 6:45.
You want to catch just us and our wonderful personalities giving you the scoop? Be sure to tune in at 6:45. You might hear something cool. I don't know. But anyways, now that that's all been said, just keeping it relatively in the realm, here's a fun little hypothetical. Texas State, the female athletes here are absolutely crazy, and I mean crazy in the best way. Like, they are awesome to watch. They are gifted. They are perfectly suited for these programs, and they bring out the best every single time. But we've got a women's football clinic coming up this Sunday at 4:30, and y'all can still, just throwing out a little advertisement, y'all can still sign up online at txabobcats.com for $35 to go out there and be a part of this clinic, because, again, the football team will be there. They'll be teaching these ladies some wonderful, wonderful tips on how to play the game, and I just wanted to get a little bit of fun in by thinking, out of all the female athletes here at Texas State, which ones would be best suited to play what position in the gridiron grind, or the gridiron grind?
Ooh, you know what? I wanna go to Randy Rupp softball, and I wanna say
that's a good one.
With her accuracy and arm strength, put her at quarterback. Let her fling it. I'm curious to see how good she can throw the football. I think it would be awesome to see her just grab a football and throw, because we know she's an athlete. We know she can do those things. Her arm strength is incredible.
Now the question is, could she do it overhand? Because, again, being a softball pitcher.
And that's the difference. And that's what gets me, is when I think about that, because softball, you look at arm strength, you know it still takes that strength, but it's not the same thing as flinging it overhand. I'd be curious, just if Randy Rupp's listening, grab a football, get someone to film it, and see what she can do, because I know athletic-wise, she'd be fine.
Then post it to Twitter at #ParkerRay.
I've got her receiver. Cassie Horma, the 2016 Texas State offensive
MVP
for ladies
soccer team.
She's got great speed. She's obviously a scoring whiz.
Yeah.
So just throw her in that slot. Let Randy hit her deep. Let's do this.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I got two names that I can throw out there from the volleyball team. There's Jalea Bolden at either wide receiver, because brings a certain amount of speed, has that great hopping ability, playing a middle blocker, having to jump over the net and make blocks. And that is another more specific area that if she were to play defense, I would love to see her covering special team snaps for PATs and field goals to see how high she can get and block those things out of the air.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas my next pick is from the women's basketball team. It's Tierra Pitts.
Okay.
Playing cornerback because, again, basketball, probably the most fast-paced sport we give attention in this country. You never get a break. Football, you can get a break once the play stops. Baseball, obviously, you can take your time. Whereas basketball, you're constantly moving, and it just seems like there's never-ending breaks on the floor when you're out there playing. And I feel it helps to suit her for being the quickest player on defense at the cornerback position, covering receivers. She was ninth in block shots last year in the Sun Belt, so a few deflections on smaller receivers could work itself out. Maybe, I don't know. Plus, she's a psych major. So you got to know, she knows how to get in your head and trash talk you out.
Psych people out. I like
this. Psych people out. Understand trash talk. And boom, baby. That is probably all we can say about what's going on with Texas State sports in general.
Man, I wish this team could actually happen. The team we're making up right now.
I know. It would be awesome. They should do like a charity game every now and then. That'd be awesome to get this crowd together.
Just a thought.
Just a thought. But again, tune in 6:45 tomorrow. Texas State soccer will be on the air here at KTSW, and if there are some students in San Marcos, go to the game. You get in for free with that nice little ID you have, so no excuses, people.
No excuses.
No excuses. But, guys, it's been another season of sweet analysis, subtle puns.
Oh, dang, it's almost over, isn't it?
And some debate here and there, obviously, the most heated being the Houston versus San Antonio debate
for
Chris Paul.
I was going to have to bring that up.
Man, oh, man.
Oh,
I
remember that. I was kind of scared afterwards. We got to see two different guys get to handle the hosting duties, and me and Parker, and we got to see a rookie get his chops in and read and get better as the season went on. But before we go into the 3:50 break, and even maybe a little bit after, what were some of your favorite moments?
Reed, you want to go? I mean,
my favorite moment just came to me. Like, I had some before the show, and I was like, oh, that was fun. My favorite moment came off air. It was after one of our shows, us three got together and went to Parker's place and duked
cool.
it out on the PlayStation.
That
was a good time. That's where we kind of got to really get to know you guys.
Yeah.
That was fun.
We had a lot of fun.
As far as my favorite on-air moment, outside of that one, had to have been me and Parker's discussion about the Astros trade deadline. I enjoyed that. I also enjoyed every single one of our interviews were great. Every single one of them. So it's hard to really pick one.
You're right.
Honestly, I just like the fact that Raleigh got to host for the first time, and that he had and I honestly think Raleigh did a great job.
Thank you, man. You
have done a great job.
Some points I even think you did. There's some points I can learn from you, some stuff we can learn from each other. But I really just want to congratulate you because you did a great job this summer.
Thank you.
You helped
man.
Me out when I didn't have a place to stay. So off that mushy stuff. But
I'm gonna cry.
Oh yeah. Well, anyway, my favorite guest. I'll just jump right to that. Bill Culhane calling in. Anytime we can get old Bill Culhane to call in. Give us some analysis. Shout out to Bill. I love when he comes in, and he gave us a really good interview. And honestly, I want to give a shout-out to your dad, Tomcat, Tom Graff. I love the fact that he came on and gave us some of his time, and he enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was unique.
That was awesome.
It was special for us.
Yeah,
the voice of Hondo football for 20-plus years.
Sometime.
Obviously brings a lot of experience, and we're happy to have his son on board. And he didn't reveal too many of your deepest, darkest secrets, so good job, Dad. Anyways, this is what's going to carry us into the 350 break. And when we come back, I will share some of my favorite moments, and then we are going to get into some stories from what's going on in the pros. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with the last three-man Summer Bobcat Radio right here on KTSW San Marcos. Well, forgive me for that. There seems to be something wrong with pressing these promos and SIDs. So I don't know why it's not letting me go. But I guess we're just going to have
Just keep it right here.
Yeah, we're just going to have to bully us through the break. Anyways, welcome back. This is Bobcat Radio on KTSW San Marcos. For the last 10 minutes, we have Parker Ray, Reed Graff, and Riley Chestnut here. And some of my favorite moments, I would have to say, from this past summer cycle. Obviously, getting to host was a very, very wonderful opportunity for me. With my schedule coming up in the fall, I won't be able to do this show even once a week because I'll be busy with classes for the fall semester, so hopefully I can figure that out and get back to the springtime. But still, my favorite moments, I would have to say, I would definitely put the San Antonio versus Houston versus any time Texas or Houston was brought up in debate early on when I still had hope to say my team was better, because now I don't. The Chris Paul deal with Houston, going there, debating whether or not it made them better than my Spurs, Reed Spurs, and things got a little bit heated. But hey, life moves on. We're all good people. We all got good friends. But obviously the favorite on-air moment, going to Parker's place and doing a little NBA 2K, MLB The Show. We never got to do Madden, but that's okay.
We'll get there.
It wasn't in season yet.
Disappointed me. Yeah, it was too old.
Yeah.
Here's another good moment, Riley, that you will enjoy too. The day that you and I got to get on our guys' backs and try to get them in the All-Star game, and we were 1-for-2. That's better than most people as far as trying to get their players into the All-Star game.
I know. I'm still upset at Lindor, Elvis, whatever. You're an All-Star. Thank you, Elvis Andrews, for coming through once again last night, and hopefully you can keep doing the same. And, of course, my favorite interview, I mean, all of them are great, but I got to say from a learning standpoint, I loved when the volleyball assistant coach Sean Hewitt got to call in.
He was very informative.
I know. He gave great answers to all the questions and even went through a spell of what it takes to form a good volleyball strategy, gave us an insight into his day, and I thought that was wonderful. But, guys, it's been great to reflect, but let's get down to business with the very last of these segments, the Pro Talk. And in this case, Reed has been going on about it. The Astros made a trade for a reliever, and you can tell us more.
They went and got Tyler Clippard, who had a pretty good career. He's pitched in Washington for a little while. He's
been everywhere.
His past season, he started off in New York, and then he struggled. So then they traded him to Chicago, where he pitched great. And the Astros just picked him up. They sent $1 million in cash to Chicago. And he's been great. I think he just pitched last night, struck out two out of the three guys he faced, and got the third guy out in a flyout. So, It's the pickup I wanted to see at the deadline. Liriano's pitched a little bit better as late, but Liriano wasn't the big move that we all wanted.
No, but Clippard was a household name that everybody wanted.
Is much better. And now I predict it's not going to happen. But the Astros are still in talks with Detroit. I do think Detroit wants way too much, especially with that contract that Verlander has. But that's still up for debate. I personally don't think it happens.
I compare that to kind of the Carmelo Anthony going to Houston. Thing, it's never happening. The rumors are there, but
it'd be great. Yeah. But
both sides aren't appeased, and in this case, it's maybe Detroit is not wanting to give up their ace just yet, even though it's looking like their season and maybe for the next couple of years, it doesn't look like they can do anything.
They already traded JD Martinez, so I mean that kind of signals to me that they're selling.
Yeah, they're selling. They're selling under the wire, whereas Parker...
Well, I'm going to actually switch sports real quick, go to Houston Texans football here.
Ooh.
And I'm really looking forward to of course, just a preseason game, I know, guys, but New England Patriots and Houston Texans...
Calm down, Parker.
I think both those teams are going to end up being at the top of the AFC before it's all said and done, especially if Texans start Watson right out of the gate. I really have faith in that, and Watson's been coming up milestones, like he's just been breaking milestone after milestone in this rookie QB scenario, but So far he's been the go-to guy, I think, for the Texans. But I think Tom Savage is still holding on to that spot, so it's going to be a really interesting fight, obviously, to highlight that. But I look for Deshaun Watson to get a lot more snaps against the Patriots in Week 2. And looking into Week 3, I think Deshaun Watson is probably going to play a lot more in the preseason. They know what they're going to get from Savage. They don't really need to run him through the thing and risk him getting injured. I'm looking forward to this being the Watson Showtime debut, and hopefully he steps up, and then he just surpasses Tom Savage eventually. I'm hoping earlier, sooner rather than later, but I don't know. But I think the good words coming from New England was Tom Brady basically had comments towards Watson saying that he was impressed, that he's with a great organization. You know, Brady just being the classy guy he is, but he basically said that he likes where Watson ended up. He thinks that's the best-case scenario for him. So I think Brady has faith that eventually Watson will surpass them, and they've been having those two-team scrimmages, kind of two-team practices where one team will practice on one end, the other team on the other, and they've been kind of doing some some scrimmages against each other this whole week leading up to Saturday tip-off at 7 p.m. But kickoff. And I think that it's gonna be a good game. I think the defense was getting after Brady. Brady got a little upset.
Yeah,
so
he did.
I'm really looking forward to this. I mean, I think it's going to be one of the low-key preseason games that actually might be entertaining to watch, at least for the first quarter, until the starters go out, and then it's going to be kind of boring again.
Yeah, of which when you got the Patriots with Jimmy Garoppolo going in, well, maybe that'll be the difference there.
Yeah.
But my story, obviously in Cowboy land, things are in a bit of a haywire mess right now with Zeke having been handed that 6-game suspension. After a 13-month-long investigation into claims made by an ex-girlfriend of his of domestic abuse back at Ohio State, of which now Zeke is appealing and intends to show text messages saying that his ex-girlfriend could and probably will be lying from his standpoint, because a text saying that she wanted to tell a friend to lie about any domestic violence and that multiple threats were made by her against him to ruin his career. Now, why did he still get suspended 6 games when Ray Rice literally have video evidence of him punching his future wife in the elevator and he only gets suspended 2 games? Zeke was never convicted.
I know.
Inconclusive investigation, never got the key response they needed from the victim. And then, of course, Josh Brown last year, the Giants kicker who admitted to abusing his wife, and was obviously both these players, Ray Rice and Josh Brown, were released. But that was punishment from the team, not the league. Whereas the league did not suspend Josh Brown 6 games,
yeah,
for a clear domestic violence case.
It's coming down, Riley, and this is coming from a Houston fan, obviously. Roger Goodell is just throwing his weight around and trying to use America's team, the Cowboys, to prove that he can do whatever he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And he's picking on Zeke Elliott, who I don't even think, when you look at the basics of it, didn't really do a whole lot wrong.
When you do research, he didn't do anything.
You look into it, no charges were filed.
Like, I mean, they might have had a bad relationship. But there's no evidence that he abused her in any way.
If you have any suspect at all of a famous person or an athlete hurting you in any way, you're going to file charges right there because you're going to want to get money out of it. Obviously, there wasn't even files charged, so I don't know what to do.
It's literally just trying to drag him down. And Goodell was like, that's all I need. You know,
all
he just
needs.
Jumped on it.
And, of course,
good news out of Cowboys camp, though. Jalen Smith will make his debut tomorrow.
I'm so happy about that.
So that's very good. That's a great, you know, feel good story.
He
was drafted in the second round with a pinched nerve, and
ooh,
they didn't know if he was going to heal from it or not. And he worked all last season, and this will be his NFL. It'll just be his first NFL action. He's a blessed athlete. He would have been a top 5 pick had he not been injured. So the ceiling's high. I think Cowboys fans have a reason to watch this game tomorrow. So
and even good news is in the last game of the preseason, Taco Charlton performed pretty well. So it seems like it took him a while, but he's starting to put what he's learning into action and prove why he was the Cowboys' first pick in this last year draft. But I still can understand why they might have handed out this suspension from a case of, sure, they should have stuck to just what's going on with the domestic violence case, but obviously there's a lot more that Zeke has been surrounded by in terms of questionable situations, like pulling down a woman's shirt at a St. Patrick's Day parade and exposing her, you know. Again, that Dallas Bar incident where he was allegedly accused of punching a DJ and breaking his nose. Now, there's no proof, at least from the latter incident. Obviously, we know that he did the St. Patrick's Day incident. He's got to make better decisions. He's got to be around better people. He's got to grow up. And if this suspension is going to stay the way it is, this will serve, I think, as his learning lesson that he needs to shape up. Otherwise, he's not going to be able to enjoy the benefits of his talents for very long. And, well, There's one more little tidbit of a hot topic discussion. It was too good for me to pass up. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver is talking about possibly allowing medical marijuana to be used in the treatment of his players in the NBA.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, I got to say, considering all the pain medications these guys take, I think it's about time they did that.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long time coming, I think. I think the NFL needs to jump on that. I think you.
I thought they'd be the first to do it.
I think you would witness a lot less suicides if NFL could treat people like that.
Yeah, obviously the CBD part in marijuana, you take out the THC, yeah. which is what makes you hungry and high.
Yeah.
CBD is what helps reduce pain, inflammation, which obviously these athletes put a lot of stress on their bodies.
Oh, man, those drugs they.